Rodian and Sonia's Garret, A Tale of Redemption. By Doxy. We will kill desire. We will foster drunkenness, gossip, denunciation. We will foster unheard of depravity. We will stifle every genius in its infancy. Everything reduced to a common denominator, complete equality. Dostoevsky. Rodian opened his eyes and sat up on his filthy mattress. Something felt wrong, but he could not define what. It seemed earlier than usual. Rodian rarely got up before noon. Despite the ancient fan heater, the room was cold and damp, but that was not new. The squat where he and his anti-fart friends holed up was squalid, and here I am mincing words. Rodian got up and flicked on the blackened kettle which sat on a piece of tattered carpet in a corner of his room, then proceeded to roll himself a cigarette but could not find his lighter anywhere. His pockets were full of holes, it must have fallen out somewhere yesterday. They had been out all afternoon beating up fascists in Leicester Square. Not that Rodian, whose schooling had been patchy to say the least, had any idea what constituted a fascist. To him, it was just a bit of harmless fun and it passed the time. Rodian had never worked. Time was something he had too much of, and that bothered him. There was no kitchen now in the house. A hippie couple lived down there, and it pleased Rodian immensely that their accommodation was slightly worse than his own. Voices, lots of them, droned on from Tarquin's room down the hallway. It sounded to Rodian as if for some strange reasons they were all whispering. Everyone tended to shout in the squat. Perhaps, that was what had felt so wrong just a minute ago. One of them was bound to have matches, he thought. They smoked cannabis all day, unlike Rodian who was allergic and had always kept well away from it as it made it choke and pass out. Whenever he saw the state his friends were in at the end of the day, he thought to himself that his allergy may well be a blessing in disguise. Rodian awkwardly put on yesterday's jeans and hooded sweatshirt. He was extremely tall and thin, with the unhealthy pallor that comes from malnutrition. His diet of crisps, chocolate and plenty of ketchup could have sprung straight out of that world-famous cookbook, Al Jr.'s Deplorable Recipes for Far-Right Nazi Racists, available from all good bookshops. To top it all, Rodian's eyesight was very poor, but in the sort of environment where he had been raised, if I can call it that, ignored would be a better term, it had not been noticed. Let me tell you a secret. The red plastic lighter was staring at Rodian just this instant, lying on top of a scarred apple crate full of junk and dirty clothes. I am sure that my beloved readers will have guessed by now that my hero, though barely 21 years of age, was not exactly a prize bachelor high society debutante would fight tooth and nails over. In fact, though I despise Newspeak, poor Rodian could well have been called an incel. By now desperate for his first cigarette of the day, Rodian got out of his room and walked lazily towards Tarquin's room. The voices were getting louder as if no fewer than 10 people were crammed inside. Tarquin had allocated himself the largest and least awful room in the squat, still, that many people would not fit easily in that cramped space. A woman with a posh voice, which to Rodian's unemployed class ears sounded like crushed glass, started speaking. Because he was nearly blind without the glasses he had never had, Rodian had unwittingly developed an acute sense of hearing. He froze suddenly for, though she talked in low tones, he was sure she had said the word bomb. He braced up and tiptoed to the door. Holding his breath, he listened. "We should get your thick mate Rodian to carry it," the woman said. "He'll never guess we're using him. He's useless, Philippa," guffawed Tarquin. "He'll blow himself up." "So what?" the posh woman replied. "Terror is what we mean to achieve. No one will miss such an ugly moron, and hopefully he won't be identified, so we can keep on drawing his unemployment benefit indefinitely." Rodian did not wait to hear more. Noiselessly, he retreated to his room and vainly attempted to shut himself in. The locks had fallen out long ago. "Get out of here," he said to himself and hastily started packing. Though he had accumulated quite a lot over the years, He realized that there was in fact very little he wished to take with him. Looking around his room, at the peeling wallpaper, at the mangy carpet, at his dirty and broken possessions, he felt a wave of disgust in his constricted throat. His entire mind and body rejected the life he had led since leaving school as if it were poison. 5 short minutes later, Rodian stood on the underground platform not knowing where he wished to go. He hopped on a train and got off 2 stops later. Again he stood on the platform thinking. He had no one in the world. He had never known his father. Sally, his mother, was in a permanent vegetative state following her latest heroin overdose. His half-brothers and sisters, so many he had lost count, were all in care or jail. Audrey, his real or whole sister, Rodian was not sure what the word was, had never been able to stand the chaos at home. She had left as soon as she legally could and taken a job at a chippy, living a quiet, orderly life in a small room above a sweets shop. 8 months ago she had married a mechanic from a similar background and with the same worldview. They refused to live in a council flat. Instead they had bought an old canal barge which they kept impeccably clean and tidy. They associated only with like-minded neighbors and colleagues. Rodian's brother-in-law had told him in no uncertain terms the last time they had met that, unless he turned his life around permanently, they did not want him anywhere near them. As another tube train approached, tears rose in Rodian's eyes. He had always admired Audrey. It was then that, for a reason he could not fathom until months later, he remembered Sonia, whom he had met at a party once. She had been brought there by a friend, looked obviously ill at ease and left on her own after a little while. What had impressed Rodian was Sonia's cleanliness. Yes, he thought as he stood on the platform, everything about Sonia was clean. He had been told, by whom he now could not remember, that her mother was an alcoholic who not long ago had died of liver cirrhosis and that she had been abused by a string of stepfathers, but still, Sonia was clean, soft-spoken, nicely turned out and probably house-proud as well. When the doors slid open, Rodian jumped into the tube train when less than a minute before he had considered throwing himself under it. Sonia was not at home. After he had rung the doorbell twice, Rodian remembered that she worked, doing what he did not know. He sat on his rucksack in the hallway and waited. He must have fallen asleep, for the sound of the lift coming up jolted him awake. Looking at his watch, he saw that it was already nearly 4 o'clock. The lift doors slid open, Sonia stepped out and, upon beholding Rodian, froze. "What are you doing here?" she asked frostily. "I've been waiting for you," answered Rodian truthfully. "Do you remember me?" "Yes, I do. Your name's Rodian, isn't it?"
"That's right," said Rodian.
"Can I come in? There's something I need to ask you." "If it's about joining Antifart, I'm not interested," stated Sonia with steel determination.
"It's not about that," said Rodian. "In fact, I'm not with them anymore."
Sonia unlocked her front door and led Rodian through a tiny hallway into the living room. As Rodian had guessed, though simple and small, it was tidy and even cheerful. For a reason he was to understand many years later, Rodian, who had lied his way through his short life, told Sonia the truth and nothing but the truth. When he had finished, Sonia nodded and said, "All right, you can stay here, but there are strict rules in this house. If you don't like them, leave now and never come back. First, there's no question of you sharing my bed. I don't know you. I've a small rolled-up mattress and a spare duvet in the cupboard. You can use that and sleep in the kitchen. Secondly, I expect you to get a job and pay your way while you live here. Third, I live a clean, orderly life and intend to keep that way. I don't want any of your anti-fart friends here. I don't like dirt and mess and I start work at 7 in the morning, so I go to bed early. 4, I want no drugs in this house. You can smoke cigarettes if you empty and wash the ashtray afterwards. I'll start looking for a job tomorrow," promised Rodian, "and as I told you, I never want to see my anti-fart friends ever again. They were never friends to begin with,
as I found out this morning. Can I take a shower?
Yes, I think you ought to, said Sonia. I'll give you a towel, and please, change into clean clothes once you're done. If you don't mind my saying so, what you're wearing now is full of stains.
I don't have anything clean, mumbled Rodion, blushing.
Then give me everything. I'll take it to the laundrette while you're showering.
When Sonia returned carrying a plastic hamper full of dry clean clothes, Rodion was sitting in the armchair wearing a pink terrycloth bathrobe much too small for him, which he'd found hanging on a peg in the bathroom. Sonia burst out laughing, then proceeded to make omelette and a salad for tea. The following day, Rodion went out early and before 11 had secured a job stacking shelves at a nearby supermarket. As the supervisor showed him what his work would consist in, Rodion realized that he would never be able to do anything with his poor eyesight, so before starting his shift the next morning, he went into a pharmacy and bought a pair of plastic reading spectacles. To his own amazement, Rodion found his new life enjoyable. His colleagues were friendly, particularly Jason, a black man who was a Bible teacher in his spare time. Rodion admired Jason, twice his age, kind, wise and extraordinarily learned. On Friday after work, a group of them went to a nearby pub and talked over the week gone by over a pint. With his first paycheck, Rodion bought a wooden screen from a junk shop to keep his sleeping area private from the rest of the kitchen. Surprisingly enough, Sonia and Rodion got along quite well. She only ate simple but wholesome home-cooked food. After a mere 2 weeks, Rodion had gained much-needed weight and felt healthier and stronger. When they ate pasta, she made her own tomato sauce and grated cheese herself, which Rodion had never known was possible. In the evening, Sonia crocheted, which, she said, she had been taught as a child by Nana Lowry, a kindly elderly neighbor who was a retired domestic servant. Sonia made her own woolly jumpers, mufflers and even soft, warm slippers for the winter, which allowed her to be nicely dressed without having to spend very much. She bought bags of cast-off yarn from charity shops. Leaving work one muggy evening, Rodion found an old record player in a skip. When he tried it at home, he discovered that it was in perfect working order, so he started buying old vinyls to which they listened in the evening. Once, he found a bag full of classical records in a wheelie bin on the street and kept those too. Sonia worked as a cleaner at an Anglican church barely 10 minutes from home. The church had a small children's library with low bookcases against the walls and tiny round tables with matching chairs. Sonia loved cleaning that room on account of the colorful drawings tacked to the walls. She normally left work at 3 o'clock, but one day, the vicar's wife asked her to stay until 4 in order to prepare the little library where a children's party was due to start at 5. A large picture book had been left open on one of the tiny tables. Sonia was about to close it and put it back in the bookcase when her eyes fell upon an illustration the like of which she had never seen, an elderly man in a long gown herding a crocodile of diverse animals into a kind of ferry. British state education being what it is, after 10 years spent in school, poor Sonia was functionally illiterate. Still, the picture intrigued her so much that, at the end of her shift, she timidly asked her boss if she could borrow the book. "Please, do, Sonia," enthused the vicar. "It's one of our best, you'll love it." Rodion was not due back until 7:30. Sonia painfully tried to read the story. All she could make out was the elderly man's name, Noah, and that it had rained heavily for 40 days. From this she deduced that Noah put the animals on the ferry so as to save them from drowning and, perhaps, take them somewhere safe. She loved Noah for getting the idea and loved the picture of all the happy-looking animals on board the ferry even more. When Rodion came home, he found Sonia sitting on her sofa bed still trying to decipher the story. He sat next to her, which he normally never allowed himself, and gently took the book from her. Rodion's reading skills were not much superior to Sonia's, but he wanted to impress her, so he concentrated very hard and, to his own surprise, was able to make practically everything out. "You see, Sonia," he said, It never stopped raining for 40 days, so the earth was covered in water and everyone was going to drown, so Bod, I suppose he's an old chap like Noah, came round and told him to build an ark. I don't know what that word means, I suppose it's the name of a houseboat, and put all the animals inside so they wouldn't drown. Sonia peeked at the text. It's a G, Rodian, not a B. He's not an old chap, he's God. Is he like a friend of Noah's? Asked Rodian. No, answered Sonia. God is God. He's not a man young or old, nor a friend. If you're interested, you'll have to ask my boss the vicar. He knows about clever things like that. And were Noah and the animals saved? She asked after a pause. Yes, said Rodian. It stopped raining. There was this huge rainbow, and when the ground was dry again they all came out. Sonia gave a sigh of relief. Were you worried about the animals? Inquired Rodian. Not just the animals, said Sonia. I don't know why, but I really like Noah. You know, said Rodian, there's something strange about this story. It seems everyone was married. It says here that Noah gets on the boat with his wife and their three sons, and they must be grown up because they also have wives, one each, I mean. I've never known anyone who was married, have you? Sonia thought for a minute. I can't say I have, she said, shaking her head. My parents weren't, that's for sure. My boss is married, but maybe that's because he's a vicar, and Nana Lowry told me she was a widow. Does that mean she'd been married? I think it does, said Rodian, leafing forwards a few pages until his eyes came to rest on another illustration. Eh? Look at that! He exclaimed. I can't believe those people crossing the sea on foot. What a great book this is. Please, Rodian, Sonia begged, do read that story, too. Rodian was only too happy to comply. You see, Sonia, those people were slaves in Egypt, not that I know what that is. It's a country, Rodian, interrupted Sonia. It's where they have all the pyramids and the Sphinx, I think, as well. Right, said Rodian and resumed his reading. Those people were called the Children of Israel. I suppose that's a country too? I know about Israel, said Sonia. My boss goes there all the time. It must be really nice, then. I'm sure it is, answered Sonia, but he goes there because that's where Jesus was born. Rodian, who had never heard of Jesus, went on reading as best he could. So, this time, God told this old chap Moses to take the children of Israel out of Egypt, but when they reached the Red Sea they couldn't cross over and the Egyptians were following behind really fast trying to catch them. Nasty people those Egyptians, if you ask me. Couldn't they borrow Noah's ferry? Inquired Sonia. He wasn't there at the time, elaborated Rodian. So, what did they do? Asked Sonia impatiently. Were they caught? No, said Rodian mysteriously. That's the whole beauty of it. Moses stretched his hand and the water parted so they could all cross on foot, the whole lot of them, even the little kiddies, and when they got to the other side, which was Israel, Moses stretched his hand again and the Egyptian army drowned, every last one of them. Sonia, who had been holding her breath until then, let it out. And were they free in Israel? She asked. That was the whole point of going there, answered Rodian. It was their own country, they'd never be slaves there. And you know what? Moses was also married. It seems that they all were, I don't know why. For nearly 6 weeks after that, Sonia spent every evening deciphering Noah's story until, one day, she realized she was able to read fluently. She then read the whole book and enjoyed it so much that she reread it 3 times. When she returned the book, with a heavy heart I must add, she told the vicar in all sincerity that she had absolutely loved it. Needless to say, the reverend was over the moon and only too happy to recommend more books to his young employee. Sonia went home that afternoon with Lamb's Tales from Shakespeare and Oliver Twist. In the meantime, Rodian was also secretly improving his reading skills thanks to his colleague Jason, who had kindly offered to help. For some reason, Rodian had felt no shame to tell Jason about his quasi-illiteracy. Because Jason was a Bible teacher, he at first set Rodian easy biblical verses to read, then more difficult ones later on. One afternoon, Sonia saw a plastic toy boat in a charity shop window and went inside to buy it. As an afterthought, she also picked two small animal figurines, a lion and a tiger, one made of resin, the other of porcelain. Once home, she laid her ark on top of the chest of drawers on a sky blue doily with the animals behind. From then on, she started collecting small animal figurines. Every time she brought a new one home, she stood it behind the boat until she had a motley line of different creatures made of every material one can think of. For her birthday and to her utmost delight, Rodian gave her a small statue of Merlin, which to him looked like Noah. A few months later, it was now near Christmas, Rodian, whose shift at the supermarket had started very early, came home before Sonia and found a letter addressed to her on the mat. To him, who had never sent or received a letter in his short life, this seemed an extraordinary event. He placed the letter on the coffee table, then went to sit on his mattress in the kitchen and practice his reading. Marriage had been much on Rodian's mind lately, probably because he found that institution unfathomable, and he worried lest the letter contain a proposal, even though Sonia, who was rather isolated and seldom went out, had never mentioned a suitor. "Oh, it's from my dad," exclaimed Sonia ecstatically when she slit the letter open an hour later. "Which one?" asked Rodian. "My real dad," Sonia explained, "Simon Marmeladov. The others were fakes, just my mum's boyfriends, really." "He's got the same name as you," said Rodian. "Of course, he does," shrugged Sonia. "He's my father, silly." "What does he write?" inquired Rodian worriedly. "Here, I'll read it out loud," Sonia offered. "My dearest Sonia, I was released from prison for the 14th time 6 months ago and decided I never wanted to see the inside of a cell again. You know I'm not clever, but still, I realized that to avoid doing jail time again I needed to change my ways and turn my life around completely. So I stopped drinking and found a job washing dishes at a pub here in Exeter. I must say my boss Roger helped me a lot. Like me, he's an ex-alcoholic who lost his family as a result. He showed me the errors of my way. I'm sure you'll like him when you meet him. I'm now 43. When you were born, I was an irresponsible young sod. I don't want to be an irresponsible old sod as well. I hate myself for not marrying your mum when she, or rather I, got her pregnant with you and sticking to the two of you, come what may. I know she's dead and blame myself for it, though people will say she too made choices. Instead of doing my duty, I got into trouble. That is, made a lot of trouble for people I didn't even know, and was arrested once again. In my books as they are now, you can't do worse than that. I live in a room above the bar and spend my free time reading. I don't go out much, best way to avoid trouble if you ask me. A few months ago, I happened upon an adventure story by Homer and liked it so much that I now only read Greek literature, which is so full of common sense and wisdom. Those people knew human nature like no one does today. I'd love to learn Greek and maybe one day visit Greece even. I very much want to make it up to you and look after you, though everyone says I left it a bit late, as you're old enough to take care of yourself now and perhaps you want nothing to do with your old sod of a father. This place is a big sprawling Victorian building, and if you like, Roger could give you a really nice room near my own. He also lives here in a flat, so you wouldn't be alone with just your old man. I don't have a mobile phone, as they're the first step on the road to perdition, but if you call the bar, I'll write the number at the bottom. I'm there every evening from 6 o'clock. Your loving dad, Simon Marmeladov. What are you going to do? Asked Rodian anxiously the minute Sonia had finished reading. Call my dad, of course, said Sonia, taking her mobile phone out of her handbag. When 3 weeks later Sonia announced that she was moving to Exeter, where she had spent a weekend with her father and Roger, and had found a job through her boss whose brother-in-law was also a vicar in Exeter, Rodian fell into a deep depression even though Sonia thoughtfully offered to call the council so as to transfer the flat to him. At the pub on Friday evening, Rodian's colleagues, who could not help but notice how gloomy he had been lately, mustered their courage and asked what was wrong with him. Despite his introverted nature, Rodian had been dying to unburden his soul. He explained the situation briefly, then concluded with these words. "I've come to love living with Sonia. She's a good person who keeps me on the straight and narrow. Considering what her childhood was like, she really deserves admiration. I hate the thought of losing her and being on my own again. If you want to go on living with her, why don't you pop the question?" asked Jason, the Bible teacher. Rodian remained silent for a long time, not because he did not understand the phrase Jason had used, rather he had never imagined that marriage was an institution which could apply to him one day. "She could say no, of course," pursued Jason, "but marriage is what people choose when they want to live together permanently." At last, Rodian gave a radiant smile. "Will you be my best man, Jason?" he asked. On his way back from the pub that same evening, Rodian noticed a tiny flower shop he must have passed hundreds of times before. As he walked inside, his eyes fell on miniature bouquets of forget-me-nots in a galvanized bucket and thought to himself that they were the exact same color as Sonia's eyes. Because Sonia had two eyes, Rodian, who at heart was still a child, bought two bouquets which he carried home shyly, one in each hand. "Oh, Rodian, those are lovely!" Sonia exclaimed, taking the flowers out of his hands and putting them in a jar of water. "What are they for?" "It's not my birthday." "I know it's not your birthday," said Rodian, then paused. "It's the day I ask you to marry me." Sonia stared at Rodian with big eyes and remained silent. "You're free to say no," stammered Rodian, already losing his nerve. "I know I'm not." "Of course I'm free to say no," Sonia cut him off, "but I'm not going to." Simon Marmeladov was over the moon at the prospect of coming to London and give his daughter away, all the more than his boss and friend Roger, whom Sonia had met in Exeter, would be there to lend a helping hand. Rodian obtained his transfer, together with a promotion, to the Exeter branch of the supermarket where he stacked shelves. He hesitated for a long time before writing to invite his sister Audrey and her husband to his wedding. Shame about his past held him back. In the end, it was Sonia who convinced him to send Audrey the first letter he had ever written. "I must inform my beloved readers that it was long and carefully worded." To his pleasant surprise, Rodian received a congratulation card 2 days later stating that his sister and brother-in-law would attend the ceremony. Sonia's boss was sorry to lose such a trusted employee, but at the same time proud to be the clergyman who would celebrate the wedding. His wife, a kind soul with a soft spot for Sonia, presented her with a brand new copy of the children's Bible, for that was what it had been all along, which had so impressed her and changed her life for the better. During their engagement, Rodian and Sonia started attending Jason's Bible classes. Rodian also consulted an ophthalmologist and was fitted with proper glasses. Our story should end happily ever after at this point, but it does not, for our friend Roger the publican, about a month before the wedding, had the misfortune to encounter the wrongdoer called Dazia, whom my esteemed reader met in the last installment of this magnificent saga, and Dazia, being the miscreant she was, in no time convinced Roger to join the ranks of British dissidents. Just 3 weeks before Rodian and Sonia's wedding, he called Simon into his office and began thus. "See, I know you're not going to like this, but, trust me, this is really good news. I'm selling the pub and moving to the Andrei Sakharov dissidents' campsite. And I want to take you with me." "But Rog," Simon faltered, "you know my little girl is getting married at the end of this month. Her husband-to-be has redeemed himself through hard work and seems solid, but still I'd like to be nearby to make sure they're all right. I've been a rotten father, it's the least I can do." "I know you want to make amends to Sonia, see," said Roger, and I respect you for it, but the campsite isn't exactly miles away, just outside Barnstaple. In fact, you'll be able to see them every weekend. The thing is, that lot at the campsite bought a 16th century inn which was about to be turned into an Islamic cultural center, that is a den of terrorist iniquity and child rape, and moved every last piece of timber to the campsite. They have a mistress carpenter they called Savannah who oversaw the whole process. Let me tell you, see, it's a magnificent building and they've asked yours truly of all people to be their publican. When you see the room I've set aside for you, you just won't be able to resist. The pub is massive with a honeymoon suite so glorious I hope your daughter and son-in-law will decide to spend their honeymoon there. Part of the building will be a public library, those dissidents are a cultured lot, and Mrs. Cohen who lives at the campsite has volunteered to run it. Is she Jewish? Asked Simon stupidly. I didn't know you joined the Labour Party, see, Roger quipped. You know me better than that, Rog, and I have nothing against Jews, honest. Her name's Lucy, Roger scolded, and she grew up in the East Side. Rog, pleaded Simon, we'd arranged that my little girl and her husband would live here at the pub, at least at the beginning. I'm your friend, see, said Roger. I'm not about to let you or your family down. I called Dazia, who's an old girl who seems to be running the whole dissident show behind the scenes. She said that an old boy who lived in the Alakanders in a VIF building has just passed away. That's another place dissidents have bought, by the way. His small flat at the top is now free. Next time they come here, Sonia and Rodian can go and view it. If they like it, it's theirs. They won't be able to meet Dazier, though. For some reason, she's gone to Chernobyl of all places. But will it be safe for them living there? Worried Simon. I've told you my son-in-law used to be with Antifa and they're a bunch of terrorists. What if they come after him? See, they'll be safer than where they are now, safer even than they'd be living here with you and me. Dissidents groups are all about solidarity. Looking out for one another is what they do best. Say yes, see please, I don't want to lose you. Everyone at the campsite is nice and friendly and dying for a real pub. There are lots of Greek teachers living there, several are retired. You told me you were keen to learn Greek. I'm sure they'll be delighted to teach you. Stop right there, Rog, said Simon. I'll write to Sonia after lunch. If they like the flat, I'm your man. Rodian and Sonia came to Exeter the following weekend. Early on Saturday morning they walked hand in hand to the Alakanders in a VIF building which had been designed by a Russian architect at the end of the 18th century and had an unmistakable St. Petersburg flavor. The elderly porter who led Rodian and Sonia to the top floor in the ancient cage lift was reserved but not unfriendly. Before unlocking the door he warned, "The flat needs refreshing. Absalom couldn't do much at the end. Ladies here helped, but there was only so much they could do." The flat consisted in a small kitchen and a large room with an east-facing window and a fireplace in the corner. The bathroom on the landing was shared. The walls needed repainting and the floorboard scrubbing, but it was a nice place. Although the furniture had been removed, an antique wooden shelf painted aqua had been left hanging on the back wall. Sonia gazed at it and suddenly felt as if she were floating. I love it, she said to no one in particular. The 2 weeks Rodian and Sonia spent at the Andrei Sakharov campsite were the happiest in their life, so far. They immediately became friends with everyone. It was several years before Dazia thought of importing KGB agents. Unbeknownst to Rodian and Sonia, an event of transnational importance had occurred at the campsite. Gideon's dog Marius had become a father. But unlike Leroy, the rap music enthusiast who so tormented Rosie before she became Mrs. Gideon, Marius had had all his children with just one female dog. So, before they left for their new home, one of the puppies was presented to the newlyweds to Sonia's absolute delight. While she was in Chernobyl, Dazia had left her mini at the campsite. Her friends were allowed to use it provided they drove carefully. The inhabitants were so sorry to see Rodian and Sonia leave that they decided to accompany them to their new flat in Dazia's mini. Roger drove, Rosie sat in Gideon's lap on the front passenger seat, Mrs. Cohen sat in Mr. Cohen's lap on the back seat next to Simon holding Marius, Rodian with his wife in his lap were crushed in the corner. Selena and Savannah followed on Gideon's scooter. The British police could have arrested a mini full of wrong thinkers in one swoop, but they were too busy monitoring Facebook, Twitter and Wikipedia for hate speech. It was now April, nighttime but not late. Rodian changed into his pajamas and looked at his wife already asleep, at their flat so tidy so clean, at the postcard of a Greek church which his father-in-law had sent them promising many more, and wondered how a man who led such a steady, orderly life could have once lived in a filthy squat and above all belonged to such a foul organization as Antifart. Rodian shook his head in disbelief and got into bed next to Sonia. Then he picked up his wife's Bible off the table and started reading Exodus. Copyright text and images Doxy 2020.